So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
Good morning. I'm Roland Martin. Next on News One Now. Has Donald Trump opened himself up to being impeached? He asked, according to FBI Director James Comey, according to a memo, asked him to stand down with an investigation of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn. This has lit Democrats up, and also Republicans are even saying they want to see those memos from James Comey. We'll talk with Congresswoman Karen Bass, Congresswoman Maxine Waters, also legal analyst, and also our panel to break down what is next. Us operating folks right now in a constitutional crisis. Also on the show, we'll give you details about the officer in Tulsa, Oklahoma, who is on trial for killing Terrence Crutcher. She took the stand on yesterday. We'll give you the details of that particular case as well. Also on the show, the Justice Department opens an investigation into a Texas police officer's fatal shooting of 15-year-old Jordan Edwards. Also giving the latest that case as well. 63 years since Brown versus Board of Education, and we still continue to have segregated schools. What is being done to change that in America? It's time to bring the funk on News One Now, TV One. Explosive allegations, folks, this morning dealing with President Donald Trump. Another day of madness in the Oval Office. The New York Times reported that a former FBI Director James Comey kept detailed memos showing that Trump asked him to stop an investigation into Michael Flynn one day after he was fired as Trump's National Security Advisor. This took place on February 14th, when Comey attended a terrorism threat briefing at the White House. When that meeting was over, Donald Trump asked to speak with him privately. Other people in that meeting included Department of Justice Attorney General, guess what? Jeff Sessions. According to notes Comey wrote documenting their conversation, Trump said, quote, "I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go. He is a good guy. I hope you can let this go." Comey responded, "I agree, he is a good guy." Now, the White House denies that conversation, issuing this statement: "The president has never asked Mr. Comey or anyone else to end any investigation, including any investigation involving General Flynn. The president has the utmost respect for our law enforcement agencies and all investigations. This is not a truthful or accurate portrayal of the conversation between the president and Mr. Comey." Now, keep in mind, folks, yesterday, the normal White House daily briefing did not take place on camera. This, of course, was after the whole issue of whether or not Trump revealed sensitive information to Russia. This story then dropped later. This story dropped later in the day. Now, again, Comey is known to keep very detailed notes of any conversation that he has with the president. According to sources to the New York Times, it's also been corroborated by the Washington Post and others. There are other memos as well. Lots of questions for us to get to. Let's get right to it. Let's go to Congresswoman Karen Bass, of course, California. She sits on the House Judiciary Committee. Congresswoman, I want to start with you before I go to the rest of my panel here, before I also go to Chris Metzler, President, CEO, Chief Innovator of JMI Group, also Republican strategist. Congresswoman, when you hear these details, when you hear that Comey kept detailed memos, does this rise to obstruction of justice by President Trump?
Well, you know, I certainly don't know. I'm not a lawyer. But what I can tell you, though, is that this is, I think, probably the most dramatic revelation that has happened so far. I mean, it's hard to believe, Roland, that he hasn't even completed 4 months of his presidency, and all of it seems to be just falling apart. This is just days after, you know, him firing Comey. So I really do believe that if Comey has kept the detailed notes the way everybody says he has, then I wouldn't be surprised if we're not looking at the beginning of the end.
You sit on the Judiciary Committee in
yes.
the House.
Uh-huh.
And obviously, you're going to have significant hearings. And so the question is, is it time for James Comey to testify publicly so everyone can hear his answers to these critical questions?
I absolutely believe it's time. I hope that happens very soon. But I also think that you're beginning to see a crack with the Republicans. So, for example, on the other committee, the Government Reform Committee, Chairman Chaffetz has said that he is willing and ready to subpoena if necessary. So this is really putting my Republican colleagues back against the wall, and they're going to have to make a decision. You know, how long are they going to stand by him? And I think it's going to be a question for his base as well. You know, clearly, health care reform is one of the most significant things that has happened with Trump Care that was passed just a few weeks ago. Nobody's even talking about that right now because there has been so much chaos in the last couple of weeks. So I'm hoping that he comes before the Judiciary Committee, the Government Reform Committee, and the Intelligence Committees. I think that we'll be seeing a lot from former Director Comey.
You made the point about what Congressman Chaffetz said. He's made it clear he wants to see those memos and is giving them a week. You also have Senator Lindsey Graham on the Republican side across the in the other chamber also calling for these hearings. It is clear that the American public needs more answers. Again, this is coming on the heels of Trump providing sensitive information to the Russians.
Yes.
That came from Israel. I mean, this seems to be a White House that is imploding.
And you know, I mean, he's getting ready to leave the country, and I think we're all going to have to brace ourselves for that, because I can't imagine what embarrassment is going to happen, you know, over the next week. But I do think it's going to be really important to keep our eyes on Jason Chaffetz, because he is not running for re-election. So, you know, he doesn't have a lot to lose, and I think a lot of people are speculating maybe he wants to run for governor. So he could certainly use this to his political benefit, but I'm hoping, rather than an opportunistic view of it, that he will actually have the courage to step forward and to challenge what's going on.
You made a point about where Democrats stand. Senator Patrick Leahy, of course, he has made it clear that Republicans should put country over party. Here's what he had to say. All right, so I'll actually get that soundbite ready there. Congressman, again, Congresswoman, last point here. Trump is leaving for this foreign trip. Should these hearings start the day he gets back?
I absolutely think they should start the day he gets back. However, you know, I don't think there's any reason to wait for Comey. I mean, I think he can be, you know, out of the country for this to happen. I know that, you know, there is a tradition when the president's out of the country that things, you know, be calm here. But this is such a critical situation in our country. And I just have to tell you, Roland, in my district, you know, people are just paralyzed with fear. They're very much afraid of this president.
Right.
I have town hall meetings that normally were 200-300 people. I have 500, 800 people turning out, all expressing their fear and panic with him. And so I don't know that we can wait for him to get back for us to hear from Comey.
Congresswoman Karen Bass, hold tight 1 second. Let's go to Chris Metzler. I want to get your thoughts. Clearly a serious, serious problem here for President Trump in this White House.
Yeah, it is a serious problem, but let's look at a couple of things. From the standpoint of obstruction of justice, at this point, the evidence is not sufficient to prove that there was obstruction of justice. Here's what's going to have to happen. What's going to have to happen in this particular case is it's going to be Trump's word against Comey's word. That's essentially what you're going to have. So at this point, I know people are talking about impeachment for obstruction of justice. The evidence at this point simply is not there.
Let's go to legal analyst Monique Presley, attorney with the Presley firm here in D.C. Monique, your assessment as a lawyer about whether or not President Trump has obstructed justice by asking Comey not to stop the investigation into Mike Flynn.
The relevant provisions under the U.S. Code, we're looking at 18 U.S.C. 73, and there are a couple of different sections, 1502, 1503. I would agree that we're not there yet where what people normally think of as obstruction is concerned, where there's been active bribery or there has been success at preventing something from happening, but that's not the only provision. There's a provision that deals with what you would think of as undue influence by a supervisor. And what supervisor could there be bigger than the President of the United States? And it actually provides that where the supervising authority corruptly or by threats or by force or by any threatening letter or communication endeavors to influence, intimidate, or impede any officer in any court of the United States or officer who may be serving for examination or investigation of a criminal proceeding, that is also considered obstruction. And that is exactly what we're dealing with here. Now, yes, we could use more evidence of it, but it seems pretty obvious if the words that are in the Comey letter are true, that this president did attempt to use his position to influence the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigations. And I think that that is something that we're going to hear more and more, not just Democrats, but Republicans say needs to be addressed by way of hearing.
Spencer Overton, president of the Joint Center for Political and Economic Studies, this is clearly a crisis for the Republican Party and one that they have to confront because, look, you got midterm elections next year. His approval ratings around 36-39%. Right. You keep having these hits. You're not having any discussion about tax reform, about health care, right, about infrastructure. Right. It's all about his own self-inflicted wounds.
No, that's right. And so part of it is political, right? Part of it is the legislative process, right? But also getting back to this obstruction piece, it's not just obstruction to try to influence and talk and say, hey, cool out on Mike Flynn. But then after that, to let the FBI director go, that certainly interferes with an investigation.
And he stipulates in the interview with Lester Holt that he did so as a result of the Russian investigation.
That was part of his thinking on this. He acknowledged it. It's from his mouth.
Greg Carr, I want to go to you as well. When you talk about this battle moving forward, the White House issues a denial, but everyone is running for cover. Even Fox News last night couldn't find Republicans to come on the air to defend Donald Trump. That says a lot.
It does. And as Spencer said, this is really political. The Republicans have to gauge how much more of Trump they can stand because Trump's worst enemy is Trump. They can't take his Twitter. Even H.R. McMaster, who he's beefing with by all accounts, got on TV yesterday and said he didn't know where that information came from. Everybody's withdrawing from Trump, but Mitch McConnell's only interest in this and Paul Ryan is can they hold him together long enough to get their agenda? McConnell admitted as much on television. So really, they don't care about Trump as long as they can get their agenda forward. And finally, we look at health care, for example. Rep. Bass brought that up. You've got several Democrats, Joe Manchin and several others, who are now talking to moderate Republicans in the Senate. This whole thing might come apart. And their concern is, can they get something to this man's desk so he can sign it before he implodes?
Sue Zoldak, you're a Republican. You deal with communications. Trump believes he's a communication strategy. No, he is a lying strategy.
Yeah, well, his strategy has always been, founded on the power that he has by speaking words, and he's come from a world where whatever he says happens and goes, and this is clearly, obviously, a very different world that he lives in. I think, the important thing for both parties is to get through whatever hearings that you have to do, I think, as quickly as possible. I think, the public is tired of years and years of investigations of Benghazi, of emails, or whatever it is,
but that sounds like Republican hearings.
No,
We can't think about years and years of hearings. Typically, you would think about, Republican hearings during President Bill Clinton, the Benghazi hearings. Democrats have not actually had these years and years of hearings.
I don't know about that. But
show me the evidence.
I don't know about that.
Hold on. I think there's blame on both sides. When you say long hearings, show me the example where Democrats have had long hearings like Republicans. I'll wait.
I don't want to make this conversation about Hillary. I think that she extended her own investigation many
Republicans
times.
She extended what investigation?
The email server investigation.
No. That wasn't hers. That was the Republican investigation.
But she could have ended it much quicker.
Well, first of all, Sue, one reason we no longer have the independent counsel is because what Republicans did with Kenneth Starr, and Democrats got rid of it because it was abused. So please, let's just be real honest with that. Congressman Bass, I got to go to a break in about 40 seconds. Final comment from you.
Well, when you talk about the president's words versus Comey's words, one thing that we have seen from this president is that he's a pathological liar. And you have hours and hours of tapes of him completely contradicting himself over and over again, it doesn't seem as though he has any control. So I think when all is said and done, if you're going to put Comey's memos next to Trump's tapes, I think Comey's going to come out the winner.
Congresswoman Karen Bass of California, we truly appreciate it. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Monique.
Chris Metzler, Spencer, Kim, Greg, LaDon, hold tight 1 second. We'll get back to all of you. When we come back, we'll hear from Auntie Maxine, Congresswoman Maxine Waters, will weigh in on the simulcast on the Tom Joyner Morning Show. I'm sure she's got something to say about Donald Trump. 15 after the hour, News 1 9, TV 1.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
He's taking care of you a little slow, but he got you.
From Washington, D.C., Roland Martin. Good morning.
Tom, Sybil, Bill Bellamy, how are you? It is crazy here in D.C. Before we get into that, Tom, Urban League of Broward County, I'm going to be there tomorrow for their South Florida Youth Summit. So looking forward to that. And Hampton, Virginia, they got a men's scholar breakfast. I'm going to be the keynote speaker on Saturday. So looking forward to that. So, you know, we do what we got to do. So looking forward to that. Now, let's deal with, oh, my goodness, the craziness happening here in D.C. Oh, talk about fever in the funkhouse. During the break, Bill Bellamy said that these stories keep coming in waves, just one after another after another. Now we have the New York Times reporting that former FBI Director James Comey was asked by Trump to stop the investigation into Mike Flynn. This took place on Valentine's Day. Such a sweetheart. Such a sweetheart. And speaking of a sweetheart, Donald Trump's favorite member of Congress, California Congresswoman, also known as Auntie Maxine Waters. Congresswoman Waters, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Hi, everybody.
Well, you made a comment where you said we got to get his ass. Looks like he might be doing it to himself by running his mouth.
Yeah, well, I also said a long time ago he was going to lead us right to impeachment. And, of course, I've always believed that he was involved in collusion. I mean, if you just look at the man's character and the way that he defined himself during the campaign, the way he treated people, the way he was taking a play right out of Putin's playbook, I don't know why people thought that he was going to be able to keep up this kind of behavior as the president of the United States, and then not catch up with him. So I've been on this path for quite some time. I introduced a resolution back in February to investigate collusion. And so we see these events unfolding every day, and it's mounting up to inevitable impeachment. And I just know that, you know, this country is reeling from the daily unveiling of all of these potential scandals and information. I'm trying to find out now whether or not he's canceling this trip that he was supposed to go on
this week
to Saudi Arabia and Israel. Has he decided yet?
First of all, no. I tell you what, also, the White House sent out a notice on Monday to several of us television anchors to participate in an off-the-record luncheon with Trump on Thursday. I was unable to attend because I have to give this speech in Florida, and I'm not sure that luncheon will even happen, because can you imagine Trump sitting around the table having lunch with about 15 to 17 television anchors asking him about these two stories?
That would be huge.
No. He can't stand that kind of heat. As a matter of fact, finally, we're getting some Republicans who are raising their voices. They're not going to be able to stand with him if, in fact, these memos that have been written by Comey are revealed. When they're revealed, we will move more toward determining whether or not he's tried to, there is an obstruction of justice. And so, I mean, we're on the road. Either he's going to retire, resign, or whatever you call it, or be impeached.
Congresswoman, you also, of course, have the issue of Trump revealing sensitive information to Russia that apparently came from Israel. And then, of course, what really jumps out at me is when you have McMaster, of course, the National Security Advisor, who said that Trump was not briefed on the source of the information. Is he not the president?
Well, let's just say this. They don't really know how to manage what they have achieved in terms of getting the White House. This mismanagement is laughable. It's like Keystone Cops over there. I'm not surprised that he had not been briefed. He seems to walk into situations he doesn't know the history of, he doesn't know the individuals, and he just, you know, goes off the cuff and start to talk, say whatever he wants to do, bluff people, you know, lie. This is what he's been accustomed to doing in business. That's why he's rich. He's cheated and everybody and lied to everybody. And so it's not working. It's catching up with him. I'm dying to hear what Comey is going to say in his public testimony about the meetings, not just one, that he's had with Trump. And exactly what is he said?
And again, that's what he wants. He wants to come out in public and give his testimony to the world, not just something behind closed doors with a committee, right?
Absolutely. And everybody wants him to. Most people, that is. want to hear from him, want to hear what he's got to say. And he's been very clear. Now, you know, what I don't understand, what I do understand it because I just alluded to it, they didn't know what they were getting into. Can you imagine Michael Flynn feeling so comfortable that he could be talking to the Russians about sanctions? He was head of the DIA at one time. Didn't he know that he was being listened to? I mean, we all know that. Then you have Trump, who thinks that he can call in an FBI director who's known for documenting, who's known for doing memos, who's known for being able to cover his back, and think he can get away with saying to the vice president and to the attorney general, y'all leave the room while I talk to him. Well, come on. I mean, all this stuff comes out in the wash. And so here we are, having watched all of this play out. And of course, you know, most people are saying, where is this going to lead us? Where are we going from here? There still goes who are in denial, who are saying, well, we don't know. We don't know what was really said. We don't know where this is going to lead. Well, I can tell you where it's going to lead. Not because I've seen the memos, but because I've lived long enough to know bad character when I see it and what it results in.
And Congressman, one thing that people have not talked about, in the same meeting with Comey, Comey writes in this memo that Trump asked him to jail journalists to curtail leaking. Dude, it's your administration that's leaking. It's your faucet.
Yes, and thank God for the media. If it wasn't for the media and these so-called leaks, we wouldn't know very much about what has been said and what has been done. All of the unveiling really comes because the media has been digging, and they found out about Flynn and the telephone call. They're the ones that just unveiled that Israel was the ally that gave us the information that now we have put at risk because of the exposure. I mean, on and on and on. When you take a look, the Congress has not done its job. We have been derelict in our duty, and mostly because the Republicans are in charge, and we don't have charge of the committee. But we're supposed to be a check and balance democracy,
where
the three agencies of government are balanced by each other and checked by each other. We haven't done our job.
Well, according to this post by Ed O'Keefe on Twitter, CBS this morning asked 20 GOP lawmakers to be a guest this morning to discuss Trump. All said no. They're running for cover.
Their constituents are going to be saying no in their elections if they continue this.
All right.
How quickly do you think the committee could be put together for an investigation to officially begin?
I don't know. As a matter of fact, I think that those Republicans who are frightened, who are afraid, mm-hmm. are going to have to do something. And I think that something may be counsel rather than maybe a commission at this point. And I don't know when that could be, but I suspect the next couple of weeks are going to tell us a lot about whether or not these Republicans are going to get the guts to do what they have to do and move toward tying down these investigations so that we can connect the dots in ways that are irrefutable.
Congresswoman, Congresswoman Waters, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Yeah,
Tom,
go get him, Congresswoman.
Fever in the funk
house. Go get him. Go get him.
Thank you, Congresswoman.
Love you.
Love you.
26.
Thanks so much, Tom Civil.
Past the hour.
All right, folks, right here on TV1, when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about drama here in D.C. Drain the Swamp is getting a little smelly at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. 26 of the hour, News 1 Now, TV1.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
It's inconceivable. As a prosecutor, it's inconceivable somebody could come and say, stop this prosecution, or ignore this prosecution, or stop this investigation. If somebody really meant that, I'd tell them they face the possibility of being charged with obstruction of justice.
The country is being tested in unprecedented ways. I say to all of my colleagues in the Senate, history is watching.
And we're still watching. Let's continue our conversation talking about all this drama with the Trump White House and James Comey and Michael Flynn and the Russians. First of all, let's go to former Georgia State Representative LaDon Jones. LaDon, we haven't even gotten to the six-month point yet. I mean, literally, it feels like this man has been there for 3 years.
You know what it actually feels like? So today, coincidentally in history, May 17th is when the Senate started the impeachment hearings for Nixon. And if you look at the declarations of impeachment, Trump has done every single one of them. It's almost like he's following it like a reality show script. Lie to the public. Get people to lie about facts in a case. Obstruct justice by telling someone not to look into an investigation. He is following. All we're waiting for is $1 million payoff for the burglary, and we have impeachment coming right down the pike.
Chris Metzler, the issue that we have here is that for Congress, when it comes to impeachment, they don't have a legal standard. They have actually a congressional standard. Now, granted, Republicans control the House, they control the Senate, but I don't know if the Republicans can take another hit, because it's been hit after hit. And again, if his approval numbers are dragging down their numbers, we have two special elections coming up. One in Montana, one in Georgia. According to conservative Eric Erickson, the national GOP did some polling over the weekend. Those seats are shifting to the Democratic side. The GOP is looking at some serious problems.
Yeah, and you know, let's be clear. When we talk about impeachment, impeachment is first and foremost a political issue. It is not really a legal issue. So the articles of impeachment are drawn up, obviously, in the House, because it's two parts, impeachment and then removal. Removal would come from the Senate, should there be impeachment. Now, from a political standpoint, I think you have several GOP folks who are making political calculations, and they will have to make those political calculations accordingly. And that's where we are. We find ourselves in the middle of a political firestorm, and that's why you have so many people who are on the Republican side who are saying, "Yeah, I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do or where I'm going to end up," because it's critical for us to get our agenda passed. That's where we are.
Monica, you have, of course, a Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger, who is now calling for an independent investigation. Again, when you see Republican after Republican, day after day, realizing that there are problems here with credibility, then you got a problem if you're Donald Trump.
You have a problem if you're Donald Trump, but the problem is that Donald Trump is somewhere apparently in his own paranoid delusion state right now, and I don't think he knows how much of a problem he has. And I believe that that is a better approach for Republicans at this point. It would have to be truly high crime, not misdemeanor, in order for them to be able to feel good about going forward with impeachment and think that they're going to hold on to any of their offices. But again, the Constitution provides another vehicle in the 25th Amendment, Article 4, Clause 4 of the 25th Amendment. This president is inept. This president seems unable to execute his duties. This president is anti-reading. He will not submit to briefing, asks for one page of bullet points, and then won't read those. They're in there trying to spoon feed him as much information as he can stand, and it's putting America and the world at risk.
So I think maybe a kinder, gentler, more Reagan-esque approach to deal with this would be, let's figure out if this president actually has capacity to do his job. And I understand that there are many on the Republican side who are trying to figure that out right now.
So there's a double standard, Roland, in terms of this administration. On one hand, we've got an attorney general who's talking about, hey, we've got to charge people to the maximum. Let's not be smart on crime. Let's lock them up. And then we've got Trump talking about let Flynn go, right? We've got a scenario where we've got an AG who's saying, hey, we don't need police reform. Police need the freedom to basically, go against citizens here. And then you've got the president who says, let's fire the FBI director. So we've got politicization, we're politicizing law enforcement, and we've got a lack of impartial justice. So there's the impeachment issue, but then there's also this double standard that's really kind of unique with regard to, you know, our community.
Well, Spencer, I would say that, you know, this is also a timing issue. You got to watch smiling Mike Pence. The Republicans lose nothing if Trump goes. I mean, to paraphrase Stevie Wonder from Do I Do, Trump playing by himself, man. So in other words, Pence and that's crew, they can push that entire agenda. The question is timing. To what Monique says is true. 25th Amendment requires the president, I'm sorry, the vice president and the cabinet. If Pence and that crew decide it's time, then they can make a move. Yeah. But that cabinet, those appointees, the agenda rolls on without Trump.
Well, you know, I think the point here is that Trump doesn't understand the format of government. He thinks that he is the boss. he thinks that he is the boss, the CEO of Congress, that these people report to him. And I think, and you know, he's not going to be re-educated at this point on the structure of this. This is his mindset because he believes that's how it should work.
But
right?
So
from a communications point of view, I mean, the Republicans have to decide at how long are they going to play along with that and pretend that he's the boss.
In 1988, Max Robinson, speaking at Howard University, of course, Max Robinson, the first African-American to be a main anchor for the evening news, said, never ever lose your integrity or your credibility, because in the end, that's all you've got. You look at the people around Trump. If you're Sean Spicer, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, if you're McMaster, if you're, I mean, you can go down the line. This man does not care about the integrity or the credibility of anybody else. He will burn anybody. I would not be surprised if you begin, if one, you hear of this wholesale changes he might make, you've got some people who are probably saying, my God, please.
Get rid of me.
Please relieve me, relieve me of this madness.
It depends on where they are, though, because we already see that 93% of Trump supporters are still hard, fast Trump supporters, right? So who is Sarah Huckabee trying to talk to? Who is Sean Spicer? Who is his audience? If his audience is the Trump supporter, they're still hanging in there, and they're very happy what's going on. I want to know, what are the Democrats doing to take advantage of this time? Let's not just battle against Trump. What is it that's going to make him, that we can get through, that's a part of our policy to change while all this other stuff is going on?
Well, actually, Democrats can't do anything, Spencer, politically, because, again, they don't control the levers of power. But this is what I said on ABC this week. I remember when Matthew Dial was saying that the Democrats need somebody to stand up, rally the base. I said, no, you don't. Mm. I said, all you got to do is be patient.
Right.
I said, just be patient. I said, trust me, it will come. If you're the Democrats, you don't need to do this huge deal. If somebody over there is burning, you don't go get a fire extinguisher.
Right. Well, the question is Mike Pence a stronger candidate in 2020 than Donald Trump?
Well,
in 2018, brother.
Well, everybody, and that's where we are. Final comment, Chris Metzler.
That's right.
Well, from my standpoint, we have to look at this from the political standpoint, from the legal standpoint, et cetera. I think it's very, very important for us, though, not to rush to these conclusions that there is obstruction of justice at this point in time. I hear all the commentary. I understand all of that. But at this point, the evidence simply is not there. And I think it's important for us to look at it from that perspective.
Monique, final comment.
We have no idea what the evidence is. We only know as much as the New York Times, the Washington Post, and Wall Street Journal can get from the leakers. I think that what we don't know about what this president has already done can fill up every single article of impeachment. But he is also dangerous. So to me, it's not a question of whether Pence is a better president. It is the fact that, as far as we know, Pence is a sane vice president, and this country needs some stability no matter what.
All right, Chris Metzler, I appreciate it. Thank you so very much. Monique, hold tight. When we come back, we're going to talk about the officer in Tulsa, Oklahoma, who's on trial for killing Terrence Crutcher. She has taken the stand. We'll discuss that next. Also, Brown versus Board of Education decided 63 years ago, yet we still have separate but equal, some say unequal, schools in the U.S. All of that next, News 1 Now on TV 1.
Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
Justice Department is now investigating the case involving the Texas police officer who shot and killed 15-year-old Jordan Edwards. Last month, former Balk Springs police officer Roy Oliver shot into the car Edwards was riding in as it drove past him. Oliver is now charged with murder and is out on bail. A spokesperson with the Dallas County District Attorney's Office said the Justice Department's investigation will proceed separately from the county's case. The DOJ usually investigates police departments and the officer's use of force in an effort to uncover possible civil rights violations. Edwards' father has sued Oliver in Balk Springs, alleging his son was the victim of excessive force. After 7 days of testimony, closing arguments will begin today in the manslaughter trial of Betty Shelby, the Tulsa, Oklahoma police officer charged with killing Terrence Crutcher in September. Yesterday, the defense rested its case after calling fellow officers and experts to testify in support of Shelby. On Monday, Shelby told the jury a training video of an officer being fatally shot during a traffic stop was running through her mind when she found Crutcher stopped in the middle of the road. She claims she shot Crutcher after she saw him reach into his SUV through a partially open window and assumed he was grabbing a gun. Crutcher was not armed. His family and attorneys claim the windows to the SUV were rolled up at the time of the shooting. Shelby also says she could smell PCP on Crutcher, although she never told Tulsa police that during her interview. She admitted to practicing her testimony more than 1,000 times since September with her attorneys. Shelby says she does not regret shooting Crutcher and claims that's what she was trained to do. If convicted, Shelby could face between 4 years to life in prison. I want to go to our panel. I want to start with Monique Presley, legal analyst, attorney with the Presley firm. It is clear, Monique, if you listen to what she had to say, she is leaning on training to get out of this shooting.
Yes, and I'm optimistic that that's going to work for her, unfortunately. It's one of those situations where the jury is going to be instructed to look at what was in the reasonable state of mind of the officer and what they were trying to do and what their experiences were at the time. And that's why, until we get these laws changed, we see case after case that do not come down in favor of what we think is justice, but where the jury is actually applying the law.
I want to go to our panel here. Ben Crump, of course, sent out an email to several people, and he said the Tulsa police officer David Walker admitted in his trial testimony under cross-examination that he's been over homicides since 2011, investigated more than 300 murders, and had never shown a suspect a video of the incident before interrogating them, except when he interviewed Betty Shelby.
Well, they're training. I mean, Monique is right. The reasonableness standard is the mother's milk of police brutality. What would a reasonable person do? And like Monique said, once you can get that jury to put their entire lens in the hands of the police, well, in that case, then what the jury is saying is, well, I can't say because I'm not a cop. That's the lawyer's strategy. Get them to trust what she's going to say and let her walk.
Absolutely. One step further, I've prosecuted criminal cases and defended them, and this jury instruction that they are often given, which makes a distinction between a reasonable person standard for you and I, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So even someone who may have mental illness will follow that reasonable person standard, but a reasonable police officer standard is very different. And when the prosecutor explains that to the jury, when the defense team explains that to the jury, it is very difficult to get over it, particularly when officers are already given a benefit of the doubt simply because of their position in law enforcement.
Sue.
Well, you know, all of these shootings have been very tragic, and I think the importance of this one is that you have to look at all of these cases one by one. I mean, this is not a case of, you know, every police officer is bad. I think she, you know, her, as people have mentioned, her defense has been slightly different, that she couldn't hear the things going around her, that she was under kind of a personal trauma from the intensity of her training. And look, I mean, whether she's white or black, a lot of people, that's a believable circumstance for a mental state for someone.
Except there's a problem. Please show the video.
How about that?
Show me the helicopter video. I want to see the helicopter video. So here's the deal. There were other officers there, and she's the only one who reacted in terms of shooting Terrence Crutcher.
She has testified that she, at that point, she did not hear a single other, she did
but
not
she
realize.
Okay, hold up,
right.
Hold up.
Right.
So her husband's in a helicopter. She don't hear a helicopter.
Right.
There's an officer literally standing over her right shoulder.
Inches away.
Two more officers show up, but she don't hear or see none of them, Spencer.
I mean, have you ever been in a life-threatening situation,
no.
though? I can't say I have.
Hear.
I don't
Sue,
know.
Sue,
I don't,
Sue.
I'm not going to speak.
A life-threatening situation is not when a guy is walking like a zombie.
Right.
He's walking so slow.
And that's what
if you,
trying.
I mean, no, that's the deal, Spencer. You show the video. This guy is walking very slowly.
And unfortunately, for many,
Monique, 1 second. Monique, 1 second. Spencer, the Monique.
Unfortunately, for many black folks, being stopped by the police is a life-threatening situation.
That's right,
Monique.
No, a police officer is supposed to be trained to be in life-threatening situations. It's not a question of whether we've been in one. That's the place that the reasonable standard should work against them, not for them, because they are supposed to know how to listen and hear helicopters and observe the scene and perceive real threats and imagine threats. They're supposed to be able to do that. If she was poorly trained, if she had some sort of PTSD going on because of being frightened by some video that she has seen, then those are all flaws. That's failure of training. And in a civil case, that would help. I am concerned that in a criminal case, the standard is just too high because all you get there is recklessness.
All right, well, Nick Presley, we appreciate it. Thank you so very much for joining us. We come back 63 years after Brown versus Board of Education, and we still have segregated schools. What can be done to change that? Can anything be done to change it? 11 before top of the hour, News 1 Now on TV 1.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Today, the 63rd anniversary of the Brown versus Board of Education decision, the Thurgood Marshall Center Trust is holding a fundraising gala to announce a call to action, equal education for all, based on the Brown decision. The late Supreme Court Justice Thurgood Marshall was one of the key strategists in the fight to end school segregation as a civil rights lawyer with an NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund. In fact, he was the one who presented the case for the Supreme Court. However, today, poor black and Hispanic children are becoming more isolated. In fact, okay, I don't know who wrote that. Y'all, it ain't poor black and Hispanic kids who are being isolated by white affluent peers. It's just black and Hispanic, period, whether you poor or not. So let's not just say it's poor. This, according to a new GAO report, has shown the number of high-poverty schools serving black or brown students nearly doubled, growing from 9 to 16% between 2001 and 2014. Marshall's widow, Cecilia, expressed disappointment in what we are seeing today, with courts allowing some schools to remain segregated. She told the Los Angeles Sentinel, "We haven't made too much progress. 63 years later, we're still fighting in the courts for equal treatment, and that's not what my husband nor I would have imagined would be going on today." Joining us to discuss this with the status of the school segregation, Thomasina Yearwood, president and CEO of the Thurgood Marshall Center Trust, also Ben Chavis, president of the National Newspaper Publishers Association. Thomasina, first and foremost, when you look at this, so look, schools are really based upon neighborhoods.
Yes.
And
yes.
So if our neighborhoods are segregated, which are also based upon income, our schools are going to be segregated.
That's right.
How do we change it?
We have to keep moving forward. As Mrs. Marshall has stated, we can't give up.
She's very strong in terms of continuing the legacy of Thurgood Marshall, and we just cannot give up on this situation.
Ben, look, you got a lot of black folks who are saying, look, I don't give a damn about this. I want to focus on getting our kids educated. I don't care if they're sitting in all black classrooms. And I mean, a lot of more people, a lot more folks are having that viewpoint.
Well, I think that black America has a right to demand equal high quality education for all students, but particularly for black students. And one of the reasons why today is so important, Roland, earlier you had the video of the police brutality. We don't see videos of what's going on in the public schools of America today. The truth is, it's 63 years since the Brown decision, and the schools are resegregating. And that is why the National Newspaper Publishers Association, we're joining with the Thurgood Marshall Center for this event this evening. So pleased that Mrs. Marshall, Mrs. Sister Marshall, will be there this evening. But I want to just go to your point, Roland. This is about equity of resources, equity of facilities. One of the reasons why Thurgood Marshall worked so hard to get the Brown decision in 1954 was because it was inequitable. It was not only that the schools were segregated, but the black schools were not getting the resources that the white schools were getting. We were not getting the preparation, and therefore it created an educational gap. Now, since 1954, racism in the public school system is still alive. They attract people in the school system. Blacks are still not getting a fair chance, a fair opportunity, and equal education. And that's the issue on this 63rd anniversary.
But Thomasina, okay, so you're raising money with the gala, but to do what? So what exactly are you planning to do to change this?
Well, what we're doing now, we're going to launch a Thurgood Marshall Society program, and that is going to work with young African-American youth in terms of where they need to be today to be successful.
Right. We want our young people, Roland, to strive for excellence. We need to encourage our young people. And we can't just lament the fact that there's still racial discrimination. We have to overcome it. And the way we overcome it is that we make sure that every child, not some children, but every child in our community has an equal, fair chance to get the best possible education in the world, because education is the key to freedom.
I want to go to our panel here, Greg. I mean, look, again, our neighborhoods are segregated, which means our schools would be segregated.
That's right. Everybody should read Richard Rothstein's new book, The Color of Law. He says this isn't just about decisions. This thing has been unconstitutional since the end of the Civil War. And then what you see in the Brown, for example, 10 years after Brown, nobody had desegregated. The court comes back in, and you have a window between 1965 and Swan versus Charlotte Mecklenburg where you see some progress. Then there's this long retreat, Milliken versus Bradley in Detroit. The Supreme Court would not let them chase the money outside the Detroit city limits because they said, well, those people moved out there. It is residential. This thing is held in place by money and by law. And until we address it as a legal issue and as a policy issue, we'll be back here 63 years talking about this again.
I'm following
Ben, Ben, one second. Go ahead.
I'm following you because now we're starting to see gentrification. Gentrification, we're starting to see some of the schools change. We know that education flows with the money. So part of it is at a bigger level, we have to look at what solutions do we have, but then also at a more micro level, why are we choosing to live in the neighborhoods that we choose to live in?
And we're choosing to live in those neighborhoods, which also goes to economics, goes to jobs, and what you're actually earning. Spencer.
Boundaries of race, getting to Greg's point, this notion of suburban lines basically separating people and insulating people in terms of resources, tax base, et cetera, that's something we've got to overcome.
So quick comment.
Well, there's a simple way to free people from going to the schools of their zip codes, and that's through an educational savings account system, getting rid of this versions of the Blaine amendments that are in upwards of 20 states, and let parents choose where their kid is going to go with that money. It's not a voucher.
Except what you just saw in Alabama, where a judge is allowing these white parents to create their own school system because they don't want their kids going to schools with black kids.
That's right.
The same thing is happening. We saw the pullout of the folks when they went to the county system in Memphis. There, what did they do? Oh, no, we're going to create our own school system. And we've seen examples of that. Thomasina, real quick, what is your website for folks to get more information?
Our website is tmcsh.org.
All right, Thomasina, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Ben Chavis, we appreciate it as well. I'll be back on News One Now in 60 seconds.
Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks, birthday shout-out time. Actor Taj Mahari from the Baby Daddy series turns 31. San Antonio Spurs point guard Tony Parker turns 35. He might want to retire for that blowout last night. Former boxing champion Sugar Ray Leonard turns 61 on this day in history. In 1875, black jockey Oliver Lewis wins the first Kentucky Derby. Of course, we talked about the Brown versus Board of Education decision today in 1954 as well. And so let's go try next this day in history. That's it. All right, folks, tomorrow on News One Now, y'all know Trump going to do something stupid today. So we'll have the latest on that as well. Plus, you can also hit us up, get your comments. We'd love to hear from you by hitting me on Twitter at Roland S. Martin. Also, go to the News One Now Facebook page and friend us. You can also go to my personal Facebook page as well, where we also post a lot of the videos from the show as well. So thanks a bunch, Spencer, Sue, I'm going to call you Kim, Greg, LaDon, Monique, Chris Metzler, Congresswoman Karen Bass, also Congresswoman Maxine Waters. I got to go.
So you want the truth. Well, we got it.
That's how I talk. God knows it. I'm just straight.
It's News One Now.